Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. As temperatures drop throughout the state, New York Governor Kathy Hochul and other local lawmakers this week called on President Donald Trump to release federal heat assistance funding. The Legislative Gazette's Sagina Shrestha reports.
Mary Mayfield is a grandmother from the suburbs of Colony. She is a SNAP beneficiary and relies on the low-income home energy assistance program to help heat the house, which she shares with her two grandchildren, age 7 and 14, and her dog. At a press gathering at the New York Capitol on Monday, she talked about the struggle between sufficiently heating her house for her loved ones and paying her energy bills.
This time of year is getting colder each day and night. And I'm listening to my granddaughter, my youngest one, say, "Oh, it's cold in here. Put up that heat, you know." And I try to keep it at one temperature. But the Trump administration hasn't agreed to provide the funding yet, and that's just wrong.
Mayfield receives assistance through LIHEAP, which helps her pay for heating during the cold New York winter. LIHEAP was one of the several programs put on hold when the government shut down for 43 days. As the shutdown continued, many New Yorkers who relied on LIHEAP faced uncertainty because New York typically starts enrollment for this program in early November. Now, even with the government reopened, lawmakers say that federal funds that would jumpstart the energy program have yet to be released. At the gathering Mayfield attended, Governor Kathy Hochul called on the Trump administration to help New Yorkers weather the cold.
"Today I'm calling on the Trump administration and all Republicans to turn on this heat, turn on the spigot, turn on the gas, turn on the power, turn on the electricity. Let's start making sure that people don't have to be stressed out all across America about whether or not their families and themselves are going to be cold. Release the federal heating funds, which are essential, and join all of us here in keeping people safe and warm."
Hochul added that even with the end of the shutdown, there is a chance that the back and forth in Congress could start all over again in January of next year. She said this could jeopardize New Yorkers who receive LIHEAP. She pointed out how many of the LIHEAP recipients in New York were from vulnerable communities.
"We have 1.5 million New York households that are going to be facing the possibility of entering this winter without the support they've been able to count on, and they therefore will not be able to afford their energy bills. Two-thirds of them include small children, older adults, or people with disabilities. Again, the most vulnerable among us."
Congressman Paul Tonko, who represents large swaths of the Capital Region, talked about how all throughout the year, many New Yorkers face a troubling dilemma.
"Each month, millions of New Yorkers are forced to decide between paying for medicine, paying for food, or paying their utility bill. And HEAP is one of those strong federal programs, proven and effective, that helps struggling New Yorkers who have had to face those unthinkable choices."
Tonko also called out President Trump for exacerbating the problem by elongating the shutdown, creating more federal programs to stop running.
"This is coming at a time when working families are experiencing massive health care cost increases, rising costs for groceries, and certainly for energy bills. And it's clear that this president is out of touch. He either doesn't know or perhaps doesn't care about struggle, Americans who are struggling at this moment with these basic costs of living."
According to state officials who spoke to New York Focus, federal HEAP funding may not reach New Yorkers until at least November 24th. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Sagina Shrestha.
Advocates rallied statewide this week to call for sentencing reform ahead of the 2026 legislative session. The Legislative Gazette's Maria Mohamed was there in front of the governor's mansion in Albany as formerly incarcerated individuals and their families and Albany community organizers called for support of the Communities Not Cages campaign.
"We need communities,
not cages.
Communities,
not cages.
The Communities Not Cages campaign is advocating for the passage of three bills geared toward sentencing reform in the 2026 legislative session: the Second Look Act, the Earned Time Act, and the Marvin Mayfield Act. The Second Look Act allows incarcerated individuals who have served 10 years of their sentence to apply for a sentence reduction. And the Earned Time Act would allow incarcerated individuals to earn time dedicated to rehabilitation to make an easier transition upon their release. The Marvin Mayfield Act would eliminate mandatory minimums, which require a minimum amount of prison time by law for specific crimes, which the Communities Not Cages campaign says can be an incentive to individuals to plead guilty for a deal even if they are innocent. According to Garrett Smith, a statewide organizer with the Center for Community Alternatives, the bills would allow incarcerated individuals an easier transition to life outside prison.
Majority of people have a release date, and then they're being released to the community and with no services, no supports, no way of really moving their lives forward.
Smith says that the Communities Not Cages campaign, which launched in January 2022, is advocating for the end of mass incarceration and criminalization in New York State.
I call it personally systemic oppression because it's very organized. It's very, a lot of arbitrary rules that's really just put in place to keep a person stagnant at whatever level within the socioeconomic system they're in. But we're here to really just try to remove those barriers and instill self-reliance so people can move their life forward as they see fit.
State Assemblymember Gabriela Romero addressed the impact mass incarceration has on Black and brown communities in the state. Romero told WAMC News that she was particularly invested in the passage of the Marvin Mayfield Act, saying that it would allow judges to look at cases on an individualized basis.
So that bill specifically would end mandatory minimums and make sure that judges are able to have wide discretion, make sure that every single case is treated individualized and based on the facts of that case.
Advocates also spoke about the omnibus bill that is currently awaiting action from Governor Kathy Hochul. The prison reform omnibus bill that was passed by the state legislature in June would increase transparency in correctional facilities. It was passed in the wake of the killing of Robert Brooks, an incarcerated man who was killed by correctional officers in Marcy Correctional Facility in Oneida County last December, sparking statewide outcry and calls for reform. Romero said she hopes Governor Hochul will sign the bills without amendments.
You know, I think that these bills, like I said, are common sense. I think that a lot of these bills, you know, adding that label of moderate, left, right, whatever, these bills, no matter where you are on a political spectrum, add a level of transparency and accountability that's needed within our prison system.
Jamie Bailey Warren, whose husband Stephen Warren was incarcerated for 28 years on murder and robbery charges, spoke about why she believes incarcerated individuals should have better access to rehabilitation programs. She said she hopes that bills like the Second Look Act and the Earned Time Act will allow incarcerated individuals who have completed rehabilitation programs to be released earlier.
We need to bring our people home. There's way too many people that are in there serving, you know, 20, 30, 40 years or more. I know wives of two people that are serving like 110 and 120 year sentences, that we don't have the death penalty anymore, but that is essentially what you're giving someone when you give them 110 or 120 years. We need to change the sentencing laws. We need to create fair pathways home for people and reduce the number of incarcerated in the state.
I'm Maryam Ahmed.
In a statement, a spokesperson for Governor Kathy Hochul's office said the governor will review the omnibus bill and that the safety of all New Yorkers is a, quote, top priority, citing new changes to the Department of Corrections and Community Supervision's policies. Listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. This week I sat down with Sandra Ruffo, president of the New York State School Boards Association, to talk about a new proposed technical and career training requirement for high school graduation.
I guess we should start, Sandra, with what are these new requirements and why is BOCES so well positioned to do this?
Well, upon approval by our regents, the proposal will be that beginning in the year 2027-2028, those students who are entering as ninth grade students must complete one career in tech ed credit And that can include financial literacy or any CTE field. The intent of the State Education Department is for there to be flexibility. And so this can include internships, work-based learning as well. So that's the proposal, which is certainly exciting for those of us in the BOCES world. Certainly, I believe that BOCES is the right fit. It has a proven record. Last year, there were 43,000 students in high school who earned competencies needed for college and the workforce. And the BOCES has to work collaboratively with business advisory groups, which they do. And this provides the knowledge that BOCES need to create new programs or to make sure that the programs that they have are up to date. So actually, in the last 3 years, 79 new CTE programs have been developed. So BOCES has the ability to specialize. They centralize their services. And districts share costs. And initially, when BOCES was created about 75 years ago, certainly it was created with rural areas in mind because they did not necessarily have the means, the financial means. They were inefficient in creating CTE programs, and they wouldn't be available. So that's how we got to the place where we are now.
Yeah, and you mentioned these specific programs. I know there are different ones around the state. Can you tell us a little bit more about skilled-specific programs?
Well, absolutely. Certainly one thing, though, the difference between the BOCES of the 50s and the BOCES of today is they're really highly specialized. A lot of technology is involved in them. So even courses that you might not think, well, how would technology fit into that, they do. So we have certainly our building trades, our carpentry, our plumbing, our electrical, our masonry, programs like welding. But even those programs aren't the same as they were initially years ago. Initially you probably would think of carpentry, you learn how to build a birdhouse. And
sure,
certainly there are programs that we have where students learn to build a birdhouse. But we've recently, in the past few years, built two homes for Habitat for Humanity with everything, electrical, plumbing, etc. So that's how that's grown. In the automotive area, we know if you get into a new car, you can't figure out all the buttons and the technology involved. And those skills have to be taught to our students. So we have close relationships with the auto dealership. And our BOCES, although we have similar programs, there's 37 BOCES. So, you know, we have programs that are specific to a specific area. And that's why we depend on those business liaisons so that we will be able to meet the needs of an area. There's health fields. There's heavy equipment. Our heavy equipment at the BOCES that we have, the students are out on backhoes and bulldozers and learning how to drive tractor trailers. So we culinary area, hospitality, and cosmetology is a huge program in many districts, BOCES districts, and our criminal justice program is phenomenal. So those are just a few of the CTE type of programs. Certainly BOCES offers more. We talk about those business partnerships that we have, the advisory councils. So in New York State, if you have an approved career and tech ed program, you have to have two, at least, industry advisory meetings per year. If you're talking about a new program and developing one, for example, we're considering turf management, you have to obviously meet more frequently to be able to establish what do we need in that industry.
We're speaking with Sandra Ruffo. She's the president of the New York State School Boards Association. She also serves as president of the Broome-Tioga BOCES. What's happening out in Broome and Tioga counties? What are your specialties out there?
Well, you know, there's a lot going on with the building trades, not specifically in Binghamton, but certainly I'm sure you've heard of Micron, which is being built in Clay,
sure,
New York, near Syracuse. And they're in need of 4,500 employees and over 40,000 community jobs. If you've had the opportunity to drive through Syracuse, you know that it's a little difficult navigating on the roadways, and all that's in preparation for when Micron will be up and running. I just read, actually, about Regeneron Pharmaceuticals, which is going to build two factories in Saratoga, and that would be not two, but a factory, $2 billion, and that will need 1,000 jobs, and they're good-paying jobs. So the issue is The jobs are there, but the frustration is there's huge shortages of employees. Actually, the Ford CEO, Jim Farley, has 5,000 mechanic jobs paying over $120,000 a year. That's about twice the average salary in the United States, and they are unable to find those with the skill sets that are needed. So those are the issues that the employers are facing.
Yeah, and you said that this kicks in what, 2027?
27, 28.
So you've got a little time here. But, you know, BOCES has been a critical part of the educational apparatus for a long, long time. And as you, I think, rightly pointed out, there may be people just thinking it's carpentry and welding and things like that. But you've really expanded and helped to fill a gap where, you know, we have a lot of students, and not every student wants to go the traditional route or wants to have some basic skills that they can carry with them no matter what they decide to do.
Correct. And we have a number of projects. And again, this is not just specific to Broome-Tioga. All of the BOCES within the state have programs that to meet the needs within their communities. But how do we get the word out to our communities of what's involved with BOCES? So we have a couple of things. We have a STEAM Summer Academy, which is 2 weeks each summer, where students in grade 7 through 10 are allowed to come, and it teaches all those skills. And it's very much hands-on, because kids today, they want hands-on opportunities. So STEAM is that science, technology, engineering, math, and art. And they go to 2 weeks. 2 weeks are held at our community college. 1 week is at our community college, and 1 is within the BOCES. We also have a really very popular program. It's a CTE summer camp, which is also a 2-week camp, very project-based, and it's for those students entering sixth grade. And they go from project to project, so they do carpentry one day, they do electricity another, cosmetology, et cetera, throughout the 2 weeks. And they have found this program to be very successful in that students that went through that program are now becoming interested in the career and tech courses that are held for students in 11th and 12th grade. So, you know, we're developing a solar farm. We have an emerging battery technology course. So, you know, these are the kinds of things that are not like the BOCES that we had. They didn't even have these courses. And the same is true in 5 years. There are many careers that we don't even know what they are yet. So yeah. BOCES constantly has to punt and to be able to change. And that's why we depend on these business partners. And there are also phenomenal BTE courses that are held in our local districts. So it's not that BOCES certainly is the only game in town, but BOCES certainly has the breadth to be able to offer tons and tons of CTE courses, something that a student will be interested in. We do have a program for students in 9th and 10th grade, which is not typical for BOCES for CTE, because typically you start when you're a junior and a senior. And basically, it gives those students who really have no idea but think perhaps a career in tech education is something they're interested in, and they are able to go to that program and see, well, maybe it's something, what would I be interested in? And they're given kind of a menu of those kinds of courses that they can try. So that's also another way to get students who maybe just don't know what's out there in career in tech to be able to take advantage.
Well, I also want to mention that the New York State School Boards Association represents more than 670 school boards across the state. So I assume, Sandra Ruffo, you're getting feedback from those school board members, too, and learning what the students in those schools across the state are looking for in careers.
That's correct. It's interesting, though, in spite of, you know, we have over 5,000 school board members within the state. We have our 37 BOCES and however many there are that are involved with a BOCES board. There is so much involved with BOCES that I sincerely learn every time I go on a tour of BOCES or I hear about a new program, because it's constantly changing. So I, you know, certainly would encourage school board members from across the state when they have an opportunity to visit their BOCES and see what they have, because if you don't know what they have, it's hard to promote it.
Yeah, and to give people who are listening a place to go, is there a place they can go to learn more about BOCES?
There are websites online that tell you all about BOCES and what BOCES has, and certainly every area of the state has a BOCES affiliation other than the Big Five, which are our larger cities. They are not involved with the BOCES. They have other means by which they have their students get career and tech ed education. But certainly to just go to, you know, that BOCES, it serves your community. So the 37 BOCES serve the entire state, and they're very, you know, organized based on location.
Yeah, and just in case someone doesn't know what it stands for, it's Boards of Cooperative Education Services, and it's BOCES if you're going to search for
That's correct.
It online. Sandra Ruffo, president of the New York State School Boards Association, also president of Broome Tioga BOCES. I can't thank you enough for taking the time to join us to talk about these very important programs in career and technical education. Thank you so much for joining us on the Legislative Gazette this week.
David, thank you so much for having me.
That's Sandra Ruffo, president of the New York State School Boards Association. Listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The highest-ranking representative of Quebec in the United States was in Plattsburgh recently to discuss cross-border relations and trade. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley has more.
This is the second time the head of the Quebec government office in New York has visited Plattsburgh this year. David Brulot was in the area in February touting the strong economic ties between New York and Quebec. At the time, President Donald Trump was threatening to impose tariffs on Canadian goods, which have since been implemented. Brulot says it has stressed the economic relationship between Canada and the United States.
Our businesses are still, you know, doing business here, but we've had, you know, very challenging sectors. Tourism, for example, because of what's happened. But now we're 10, 11 months into the new administration, and I think people are starting to get their bearings around, you know, how to continue to do business here in the U.S. But again, it's been a challenging year for sure. On the tariff aspects, but we're still there helping our companies and Quebecers do business and be here in the U.S.
Brulot met with North Country and Quebec-based business interests to emphasize that the province is aware of and listening to their concerns.
We're trying to really evaluate what the impacts are for our companies back home. And we've had, you know, thousands of layoffs across different sectors because of the tariffs and mostly because of the uncertainty. But we've had also some of the successes. Mike Robert, you know, announced their new plant here in Plattsburgh. Alstom just won, you know, a fantastic contract with New York. So amongst all of this, you know, our role is really to make sure that these companies continue to thrive. And we help businesses that are going through a rough time.
73% of Quebec's exports go to the U.S., and New York is Quebec's largest trading partner. Brulot believes the province's economic strength is diplomatic efforts at the sub-national level.
We've seen renewed interest by different states across the U.S. that want to really continue to build on that relationship between state and provinces. You know, our job is to continue to do business at the sub-national level, make sure that the state governors, that the houses, the senates, you know, are aware that we're still here, that we want to still do business.
Canadian representatives have been working to convince the Trump administration to reopen trade talks and reduce or eliminate tariffs. But the Quebec Council General says cross-border trade has been permanently altered due to the imposition of tariffs.
The goal now is to make sure that hopefully the tariffs go away. Nobody thinks that the world we used to live in will, you know, ever come back in the exact shape or form that we experience. So, you know, we continue to do business, as I mentioned, with the U.S., but also that we diversify. I think it's been a bit of a wake-up call to say, well, you know, maybe we should look at other markets that can be promising.
The Champlain-Hudson Power Express will bring Quebec hydropower to New York City via underwater cables in Lake Champlain and the Hudson River. Brulotte says tariffs are not impacting that project, and it is on budget and on time to deliver the green power by May 2026.
It's going well. One of the things that's interesting about this project is that the line, yes, will sell electricity and bring power to New York and the broader region, but the cable is bidirectional, so it will not only bring power to New York City, but it will build a more resilient, more sustainable grid overall in the Northeast.
Audio is courtesy of Mountain Lake PBS.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
And that about does it for this week's show. The Legislative Gazette is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. We had help from the New York Public News Network. You can listen anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. Look for program number 2547. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics for the Legislative Gazette. I'm David Gustina. Happy Thanksgiving. Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.